B-Pod Studios.
Yes! Hello, my broken brigade! 'Tis your great leader, Broken Matt Hardy! And you are currently listening to Wrestling Inside the Ropes podcast with two wonderful blokes, James Stewart and Mike Riley. Yes! Let's get into it and listen to the Wrestling Inside the Ropes podcast!
Each week, you can listen to Wrestling Inside the Ropes on the podcast page of 98.5thesportshub.com and on the 98.5 The Sports Hub app. While you're there, check out all the other original podcasts available from Boston's Home for Sports, including Over Under 98.5. Our podcasts are also available at bpodstudios.com and in Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts. I'm going to open this week by getting WWE in trouble for something they haven't done yet. Keyword is yet. I want nothing to do with a Goldberg versus Dolph Ziggler match. Does nothing for me. Zero. And it doesn't help Goldberg either. And it certainly doesn't help Dolph Ziggler. Goldberg's next match should be against John Cena or Roman Reigns or Brock Lesnar or even Samoa Joe. It shouldn't be Dolph Ziggler. Dolph, by the way, has been on fire with his promos of late. But no one, not one single person, I don't even think Dolph would believe that he can beat Goldberg or even should be in this match where he gets squashed by Goldberg, I think. So WWE, SummerSlam, which is what we'll mainly talk about this week, don't waste 5 minutes of intros, 2 minutes of a match time on Goldberg versus Dolph Ziggler for SummerSlam. But you will, and it'll do nothing for anybody. It won't elevate anybody. It'll just be a waste of 7 minutes of her life, and that's probably a best bet. Mike, Joe Murray from Over Under 98.5, how you guys doing?
Hello.
How are ya? What's happening?
Thoughts, Goldberg, Ziggler, anybody?
Well, when I first read this, I think the instant reaction, much like everybody else on the social media platform that I did read through, and it was the same reaction I had, like, why? And then also the emoji of the eyeballs rolling, like, oh, come on. I think people are down on Goldberg for obvious reasons. He's not the same specimen he was some 20 years ago, especially since his last match with The Undertaker at the Saudi Arabia show just a couple of months ago now, which was a major disappointment. And from the face of the reaction we saw of The Undertaker after the match, it was definitely frustration. So I think the fans definitely comprehend what he had to go through, as The Undertaker is the kind of guy that needs someone to do the work for him, and for Goldberg not able to deliver in that scenario from what we saw in his last match, I really believe that is why everyone is not looking forward to a potential matchup here with Dolph Ziggler. Any other day, I don't think it would be so much of an issue. But we already did have Dolph and The Miz booked, so what's up with this with Goldberg here? Not necessary for a SummerSlam. Save it for another show, maybe when you don't expect high ratings or when you don't have a high momentum going into a pay-per-view. No need for it at SummerSlam.
My whole thing is what happened to the Miz and Dolph Ziggler angle, right? I mean, this was Miz has been on top. Like, where does he go from here? Does he get buried? Does he have another challenger? Like, Dolph versus Miz is somebody... Those are two guys that you would watch, right? You'd probably could get...
Oh, they put on great matches, Joe.
But they'd probably give you 20 minutes, right?
I mean, 20 minutes of great stuff.
Of great stuff. Maybe a little bit of back and forth, some mic action. Two superior wrestlers of this generation, and you could probably make the argument maybe Miz is maybe held a little bit higher than Dolph.
Yeah.
But Dolph does it every night, guys. And he brings it, and he sits behind the scenes. The whole thing is this. Where's the storyline for Goldberg? Where does this come in? And it sounds like it's a Paul Heyman idea. So I just don't like the Goldberg effect, just for the simple fact that what's it have to do with Dolph and Miz besides Dolph planting the seeds that guys like Goldberg are, you know, are useless these days. If they were going to bring in this angle, the only thing I can think of is possibly they're trying to do a Matt Riddle, maybe a run-in, you know, try to push Riddle because he's been talking about Goldberg as well. I'm just wondering what's the actual storyline angle on this fight, because right now, to the three of us, I don't think it makes any sense at all.
So I think the storyline is Dolph is running down these legends, Shawn Michaels, Goldberg, and Goldberg's going to get his comeuppance on Dolph Ziggler. And just to be clear, I'm not down on Goldberg or Dolph. I'm down on the match. The match just doesn't, because it's, if Goldberg should be special occasions, as I mentioned, his opponents. That's who is left on the bump card for Goldberg. I don't think it's Dolph Ziggler. If you're talking about a real amateur wrestling match, I'll take Dolph Ziggler, but it's a pro wrestling match. I'm sorry. It's a sports entertainment match. And in which case, Goldberg should destroy Dolph Ziggler. He should. Now, if there's an upset, does anybody believe that Dolph Ziggler is going to beat Goldberg? Mike, Joe?
Squash. It would be a squash. And that's why, on a match perspective, Jimmy, that's why this actually makes no sense.
Yeah, I think Goldberg wins. Hate to say it, I think he does.
Yeah, so what's the point? Are we building Goldberg back up for something in Tampa? Mm-hmm. And this is the start of it. Because Goldberg signed a new contract because WWE is insecure and they have all this money. So let's sign Bill Goldberg to a multi-year contract extension to keep him away from All Elite Wrestling. Because that's brilliant, right? Let's just spend. Just because you have money doesn't mean you have to spend money. Advice well, I should they did. Hear, too.
Yeah, and they did the same thing with The Undertaker, the lifetime contract, too.
They retire Kurt Angle at WrestleMania from Baron Corbin. Next day, 5-year contract extension for Kurt Angle.
Right.
He didn't have anything left in the tank.
Nothing. No, he was out of gas.
My thing is this, though, and that's all good points, right? I mean, maybe it is the Goldberg factor, and maybe maybe something's been leaked out there. But the reason why I bring up Matt Riddle, guys, and I'm sure you know who he is. He was at Evolve a couple weeks ago.
He's being punished for his tweets against Goldberg. That's why he's not fighting for the North American title at this takeover, in my opinion.
So why not use the reality angle of social media to try to get him involved in the match?
Joe, right? This is an easy answer for you. It's because WWE didn't script it, and because they didn't script it, Matt Riddle is being punished, because that's what happens when you try to get over on your own. You actually get over on your own, and then you're punished.
Bro.
That's just a point.
They're wrong on that. Like, this is a guy that can get over, and you can use Goldberg in this spot to put him over. It's SummerSlam. They won't do it, Jimmy. You're absolutely right. But, again, if they're keeping you away from AEW, it's a bad, poor decision.
Yep.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Oh, Mike, I'll start with you. What match are you most looking forward to at SummerSlam?
Well, the
this one SummerSlam, just to be clear, because on my text message it wasn't clear. So this SummerSlam 2019, what match are you looking most forward to?
Okay, give me AJ Styles and Ricochet.
Excellent choice.
Thank you, James. I am just like so, to quote Joe Murray, in on Ricochet. I think this guy is a great all-around talent there. And, you know, the push that he's gotten, the superstar T-shirt, the red one he's wearing there. What the heck is it? Help me out here.
Superhero?
Superhero. Thank you. Yeah, it's got the big R there in the middle. Love it. And you know what? The fact that he's in the ring with AJ Styles, who I think is the best in-ring performer of this particular generation, that has the makings to be a great match. And not trying to overhype it, because we've seen that happen many times before, but they're giving him the push here for the United States title. They're trying to make that more of a prestigious title, especially with it being around AJ Styles, not taking anything away from the United States Championship. But the fact that he's getting that push to be in the ring with the main event caliber guy of AJ Styles, two great in-ring performers, great athleticism. I am very excited for that match. Ricochet and AJ Styles.
Hey, SummerSlam, Mike, 19. Who do you think what do you think the betting odds are in that fight?
I'm going to say AJ minus 260.
Wow. Okay. It's much closer. Minus 140 right now.
Really?
And Ricochet's plus 100. Even money.
Can I talk to you about a bet there, Joe?
Well, we can talk about it, but just looking at it, this somewhat looks like they're going to Ricochet a shot, right?
This should be Ricochet's title win. This should be a defining moment. This should be the match of the night on SummerSlam, and it should be Ricochet winning the United States Championship from AJ Styles.
Betting line certainly shows that one.
And
of course,
Mike
go with the easy one, by the way, there. Like, if you looked at this whole entire card, right, isn't that the match you kind of want to watch and see?
Well, I was also going to – I mean, I don't want to jump on you guys either, but Natty and Becky, I'm really into that too. Very excited for that one.
One little rumor and innuendo here. You know, locally in Boston, Fenway Park does WWE Night. That this year is September 4th, and according to my rumor and innuendo, Ricochet is going to be the star who makes an appearance at Fenway Park.
And
they'll
probably have somebody with a championship make their way through the city, correct?
Card subject to change.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Of course.
I'll just throw mine out there, Jimmy, while we're at it.
Yes, please do.
It's Finn Balor, Bray Wyatt, and just sticking with the what do you call them? Cruiserweights? I don't even know if we
205 live guys.
Okay, Finn Balor though.
The Billy Lanny Memorial 205 live guys.
There we go. Listen, we know Finn Balor's on the way out, right? I mean, he's going to be taking some time off. It's been rumored for a while. Just to give you the betting odds, Bray Wyatt is minus $4,500 to squash Finn Balor. But isn't this where you display the Fiend? You display Bray Wyatt, all the characters. Like, you put him over a fan favorite like Finn Balor, and you can literally watch this thing just like wildfire and grow. And that's what I'm looking at. Like, Finn, you know, keeps it interesting, works the angle, but at the same time, it's about Bray Wyatt and the Fiend getting over. And, you know, I don't know if we'll see, you know, Finn's alter ego here anything like that.
We won't. Here's why we won't. A few SummerSlams ago, it was Demon Balor versus Bray Wyatt.
Right. Okay.
And Demon Balor did not blow doors like he probably should have. They had a competitive match that Balor ultimately won.
But what are you guys looking at? I mean,
but
here,
should have Bray Wyatt blow doors on Finn Balor here.
Exactly.
Yeah. And you know what? Also, you know, to have the alter ego of Finn Balor and Bray Wyatt down the line, I could see that maybe at like a WrestleMania if he is to go away for a little bit. The two super villains going at each other.
Mm.
Or Royal Rumble. Or even Survivor Series. I don't know. Something. But another big event. Maybe Hell in a Cell.
And that's the next pay-per-view, right? I believe it's been announced.
Yeah, that sounds right.
So maybe you can kind of balance a Bray Wyatt into Hell in a Cell. And who knows if Mick Foley gets involved. I don't know.
Mick can't work. Mick,
no, I'm not saying he can't work. Maybe he's like
poor Mick can't even ride roller coasters because of his concussion issues. I mean, it's kind of because one of his favorite things in life is roller coasters, and he can't even do that.
And Santa's Village,
which thankfully he can get around a little bit better now.
what do you got, Jimmy? For match?
Yeah, what's yours, Jimmy?
WWE Championship Kofi Kingston against Randy Orton.
Huh.
And it's more because these are two top-notch stars. Historically, the last 11 years, Orton a lot longer. This match is very, very important, I think, to the Kofi Kingston run as WWE champion. He hasn't had that standout match yet since he won the championship at WrestleMania against Daniel Bryan. This is the stage for it. Kofi versus Randy Orton. I'm told consistently there's not a better performer, a more smooth performer in WWE than Randy Orton. Mm-hmm. If Randy Orton doesn't get the stellar championship match out of Kofi Kingston tonight, take the belt off him. It's not going to happen. But Kofi needs this. And also worth mentioning, WWE has a documentary on Kofi Kingston scheduled to air after SummerSlam on the WWE Network.
Yeah.
Ooh. The only thing I'll say about that is I believe Becky lost and they had a documentary of her after. But I don't know. But just to give you the
She lost one of the belts.
One of the belts, yeah.
Yeah, she still had Raw.
Charlotte beat her.
That's right. Just to give you the odds. Bailey. Give you the odds on it. Kofi Kingston's actually a pretty big favorite. -225, Randy Orton +168. But you know, I do think that this storyline's been done very well.
Yes.
You know, just I'm Randy Orton and I was supposed to be this guy, and how many times have you had a Jamaican accent? Like, it's been real, and I think the storytelling will show in the ring, because so far, and I agree with you, like, they've done everything right with this. Now let's see how the ending works out.
And the thing too with Kofi is he's been set up with good, not great opponents. Although, yep, I would tell you that the Kevin Owens fight at Money in the Bank should have been better than it was, but I don't think anybody really believed in Kevin Owens beating him. And also that match at Money in the Bank was, the placement of it wasn't great. It was before the men's briefcase match. It was after the Bayley cash-in, because Rollins and AJ had a great match either before it or just after it. And that match didn't get the acclaim that it should have. So hopefully they will place this match in its proper place, and it'll be good. Actually, one, it'll be great, and it'll get the proper match placement, so it's not necessarily buried between stuff that potentially is better either moment-wise or match-wise.
You guys want the rest of the odds here for the SummerSlam card?
Oh, yeah.
I do, and I want you to start, Joe, if you would, with Brock Lesnar versus Seth Rollins. And I say that because Brock Lesnar needs to burn Seth Rollins to the ground. Put Seth on SmackDown. Let him middle in the middle card, because I'm over the Seth Rollins thing. Just have Brock obliterate Seth Rollins.
Hey, can I just pause you guys for 1 second, just for half a second? Mm-hmm. I just looked up the Money in the Bank thing from 2019, and Jimmy just had me thinking about this with the booking of Seth Rollins and AJ Styles, because the meat and potatoes of that show was the Becky Two Belt, and that's where she beat Lacey Evans, and then Charlotte, and then Bayley beat Charlotte. Right after that, it was Roman Reigns and Elias. Then it was Seth Rollins and AJ Styles for the Universal Title. Then you had a WWE Championship match after that. I thought the crowd was a little quiet on that Seth Rollins AJ Styles one, so they got to find a way to book this one a little bit a better placement at SummerSlam, so they don't have a weak crowd reaction. I'm just looking at that right now, so I didn't mean to backtrack.
No, it's interesting because it leads into this, Mike. They actually with the betting odds, they have an end of broadcast ruling, so maybe this is the go home fight.
Yeah.
And let's remember, Brock Lesnar wants to be on last.
Right.
So just keep that in mind.
And Brock Lesnar has been on last. The last SummerSlam he wasn't the main event, the last match on was 2013. And that was the Daniel Bryan John Cena championship match.
Mm. Wow.
So Brock Lesnar, what a streak. Favorite, -270, just so we know. And Seth Rollins +190, not getting the love from Vegas.
Brock should be the favorite. Burn Seth Rollins to the ground. Your run is over. Thanks for coming. Middle in the U.S. title, Intercontinental Division.
He'd be perfect with that. Perfect mid-tier, not a heavyweight title.
And I think Brock, if he's going to win it the way, in the fashion that he did, and let's not forget, WWE said they were upset with how the Money in the Bank was handled, you know, a year ago. Mm-hmm. So maybe they kind of make this run go a little bit here with Brock Lesnar. Just moving on to with a couple other matches, Kevin Owens versus Shane McMahon. Who do you guys think is the favorite in that one?
I'd have to say Kevin Owens. I think he's a favorite.
It should be Kevin Owens. But in the back of my mind, I still feel like Shane is going to be WWE champion at some point. It's a stomach feeling. It's kind of like the stomach bug I've been dealing with for a week now. So like, it's just this illness that Shane McMahon is going to be WWE champion. So I will guess that Shane is the favorite in this match.
-365 is Kevin Owens. That's a heavy favorite.
Wow.
Okay.
Shane McMahon +255. So, and I don't know. We've done this now. How many times, guys, doing the odds when it comes to a pay-per-view? Do you generally overall think that they're a little bit off when it comes to the numbers, or do you think they've been dead on as far as who's favored and dogged?
50-50.
Yeah, I would say for the most part, it's like, you know, if there's 10 matches, it's seven of them hit, three of them don't, you know. Yeah.
And keep in mind that WWE is constantly changing finishes, you know, up until some finishes get changed during the match according to rumor and innuendo. So
mm-hmm.
Just to bring up another one, Becky Lynch, Natalya. Obviously, Becky Lynch is the favorite here, -265 with Natalya, +185. I'm going to get into the 92 SummerSlam coming up a little bit later here, but hometown girl,
yeah,
you know, going up against the champ, is it a little familiar considering there's a heart in there as well at a SummerSlam?
Yeah, and also, too, it will be 2 days shy before the one-year anniversary of her father passing away, Jim the Anvil Neidhart, so you could tie that in as well. You know, I mean, this has been more personal with her and Becky. So maybe this week you do see something of Becky going after her for the Anvil. You know, they weren't afraid to do that last year. I believe it was it Alexa Bliss, I think, and Natty? They had a little feud.
Yeah, and Natalya's lost that in her home state on her birthday, her home country, excuse me. So we've seen that a lot.
Look at Bayley. She lost in San Jose, you know?
So
John Cena's lost in Boston.
So is Becky a heel?
I think she's considered a heel here, but I don't think.
Yeah, I do.
I think WWE wants her, is telling us to that she's a heel, but are the fans considering her one? I'm not sure. I think you're in the scenario where they are in a unique scenario here, and what they could really do, this is a hard thing to do. You could actually have a double turn. You could. You really could do it, but you're going to need a lot of help here. For Natty, you're going to need like some sort of interference and then an emotional, maybe a Ronda Rousey?
Not yet.
Okay, but I'm just saying, anything like that, interference to help her out, a double turn could happen.
While we're on that, I like that angle, Mike. Is SummerSlam a spot where you, I don't think Ronda, but what about Sasha Banks? Is that somewhere? As we head into the next match here with Bayley and Ember Moon, just to give you the odds, very close. Ember is +120. I mean,
it's good value.
So before we get there, before we get to Bayley and Ember Moon, Becky should win this match, but I wonder if two things are going to happen. One is this match goes on last because it's Natty's home country.
Thank you.
And
I'll take the odds. I don't think it goes last.
I wonder if because Becky hasn't been, pardon the pun, on fire this summer, and because the rumor was that Vince wanted Natty versus Ronda as the main event at WrestleMania, if Natty gets the title here.
Wow. Well, it would make sense. I could see that because, you know, Natty and Ronda both came in together as friends, and you know, you could very easily circle back to that. The seed's already been planted for someone to turn on one another, so I could totally see that. But I think what they want us to believe as fans without knowing anything about Ronda right now is that, you know, Becky is the heel, Natty is the face, and without Ronda in the picture for the long term, as of now, I think the long-term picture for them, for us to think, will be Becky and Ronda when she does come back. But hearing that, Jay Stu, I like that. I like that a lot.
By the way, I blame Seth Rollins for this, for Becky's lackluster summer. I blame Seth Rollins.
You just stole what I was going to say. Sorry. Where I was going to go with it is, so Becky's the champ, right? Ronda's out of the picture. Sasha's not here. They're trying to push Bayley, right? And I mean, do you think Bayley is doing the job? She's working the job.
Yeah.
Is she fulfilling it? And to me, like, this is a spot where I think Lacey Evans should have been considered. You know, somebody else that could have been a heel to get over here. All I'm saying is, I gave the yawn last week or a couple weeks ago for the Young Bucks. I'll even yawn even more for Bayley because I got nothing here.
Thank you, Joe.
And here's the deal. Ember Moon was a really good NXT superstar. When she was there, she couldn't beat Asuka, right? She could beat everybody, couldn't beat Asuka. And can they give us another angle in the women's division here besides Bayley holding the strap? Like, oh, Ronda's gone. Sasha, Bayley can handle it. No, she can't. She's given us nothing whatsoever. Literally, what's Bayley do? What does she give you? What's her finishing move? And don't give me the Bayley to belly. Just like, what does she do?
Savage elbow.
Ah, can she do anything on her own?
Nope.
You know? Let's just put the belt on Bayley. Like, don't even consider somebody else.
But Joe, that's the problem. You have two championships. That's the problem. They have to fill that. So there you go. That's your answer. And Lacey Evans not on the card too, by the way.
She was on Main Event against Dana Brooke this week. How the mighty have fallen.
SummerSlam card. Yeah, exactly.
Bayley versus Amber Moon.
Can you believe that though for a second there?
Yeah.
That was, she got pushed. Yeah, where's Baron Corbin? Like, where did all that angle go?
Corbin's out, I think, because Paul Heyman does not believe in him. Out.
But all that work WWE did, even to build Lacey for that matter. Yep. And now there's an Ember Moon? I mean, I think Ember deserves it, but come on now. Lacey Evans was a superior talent.
Guys. This has been going on for years in WWE. King Kong Bundy at WrestleMania 2 went from main eventing Hulk Hogan to a fourth match on the card attraction with Sky Low Low and Hill against Hillbilly Jim, and I can't politically correctly say what I want to say, but he was in a match with an undercard match the next year where he got disqualified for dropping an elbow on Sky Low Low.
And it was a six-man tag match.
Yes. Yeah, but I can't politically say how it was promoted at the time.
With the women's division, though, you're right. They've been doing it. Well, women's division, though, come on.
And
like, look, put the strap on Bayley. Yawn.
And Joe, I think that as much as I want to see a Sasha Banks return on Sunday or Monday or Tuesday, whatever wild card Sasha Banks might be, save it for Fox. Save it for October. For the Fox show.
Yeah.
Because then you have Sasha come back. It makes an impact. They need to do something that week to make an impact to get people to tune in. Sasha Banks' return, it gives Bayley an opponent for after Hell in a Cell, and then you can start this longer program with Sasha and Bayley, whether it's their friends and then Sasha turns or whether Sasha just comes out of the crowd and turns on her immediately. There's a story there, and Sasha Banks will be back soon.
Mike
was
Riley,
that a yawn I felt? Right. Was that a yawn or a man?
It was a sigh. It was a yawn. No vomit.
Good
no
job.
Vomit. Maybe after the fight we'll get a vomit.
Well, we are now less than 2 months away from when SmackDown debuts on Fox.
True. I will tell you this, though. I am out on Bayley. How about that?
I love it. Thank you, Joe.
Out. I'll ask Mike Riley this question because he will give us an unbiased answer.
I'm going to try to hear it.
Charlotte Flair versus Trish Stratus. If you were going to the casino to place a bet on it, who would you put your money on?
Jimmy had me thinking, okay, up until I heard Jimmy's scenario last week, if you heard it, go listen in the archives available on the 985 The Sports Hub app and also Google Play and Apple iPods. But what Jimmy did say was that, you know, he thinks that Charlotte is going to lose to Trish Stratus, where she comes in fired up. And I just had this. She would win, no doubt. She was a heavy favorite in this one, winning. But now the fact that you're in Toronto, too, we got to throw that in. And after hearing his scenario with her losing, Trish winning there on a two-week build-up here, that's where I'm going to put my money on Trish. But I do think Charlotte would be the favorite. So put the money on Trish for the value. But I think the odds makers are saying Charlotte.
You nailed it. Charlotte minus 260, Trish Stratus plus 180. So, Jimmy Stewart, I will ask you, how does Charlotte not get over in this match?
So, I wonder, too, if this match goes on last, because they're in Toronto. Trish is a special attraction for this show. And the reason, the logic, and I'll keep it shorter than I did last week. Charlotte has lost multiple times on big pay-per-views. This could be added to her resume, and it would transition Charlotte into upping her volume as far as aggressiveness in the ring and being more whiny, where she's on this big pay-per-view losing streak, even though she won a championship over Becky, she lost it to Bayley. So add that to the list, and it would also keep the people who are sick of Charlotte and Charlotte winning, it would keep them quiet for a little while. Because we're going to get the big push of Charlotte in going towards WrestleMania in that main event. And whether she wins the Rumble or not, I think is then in the hands of Ronda Rousey. If Ronda's coming back in January for a rematch with Becky in Tampa, Ronda enters the Rumble, surprise entrant, wins it. If not, I think Charlotte wins the Rumble and is challenging for either Becky's Raw Women's Championship or whoever the SmackDown Women's Champion is. And I think that's the long play of Charlotte. And so her losing to Trish doesn't hurt her for a number of reasons, one of which it's Trish's home country. Trish is the all-time legend. And Charlotte is just going to keep on going, saying that she's the greatest women's wrestler of all eras, even though her resume in 2019 would indicate otherwise. And it's classic. Her dad used to do this. Her dad would lose the title or retain on some funky stipulation or a countout or a disqualification, and he'd come back the next day and say, well, I beat Sting, I beat Lex Luger, I beat all these guys, because he still has the championship. And right. Charlotte can be like, I'm still the 9-time champion. I've still got more championships than Trish, and it's easy to boo her based on that.
It's a bragging, right? The only thing is, like, I don't know if this would be the last match. I have a hard time placing that there. And I think also, too, for the fans that have more of the modern era, they don't know who Trish Stratus is. You know,
that country does, though, Mike. That country 100% does.
Okay, all right. That's fair. I just don't think it's going to be. I think you're looking at Becky, Natty last, or definitely Brock and Seth Rollins, one of the two. But, you know, it's definitely a curveball there where I could see Trish Stratus beating Charlotte and then the anger, or maybe even Charlotte interfering on Becky and Natty too, potentially later in the night after her match to Trish.
This doesn't really excite me, guys. I think they're trying to put something here to give Charlotte a match, and they're bringing
Which they
back
should.
Trish Stratus. They should, right? Where else could she go here, right? I mean, okay, let's bring Trish. Okay, Trish, Charlotte. Like, to me, this is a Charlotte should get over, and then what? Trish is done. You know what I mean? Like, that's it. That's it for me. This is it for Trish. She's gonna fight. She's gonna have a match with Charlotte. Charlotte's gonna win, and then Trish is gonna be done forever.
I don't think this will be it for Trish. She'll probably make an appearance in the Rumble, or if they do an Evolution 2. That will probably be the next time we see Trish, but you never know. You never know.
And just the last one that was on the card, just so you guys know, Miz, Dolph Ziggler. Dolph Ziggler favored over the Miz, but well, card still pending on that one.
We'll see Goldberg
right.
get inserted in there, and Goldberg will be a heavy favorite, and 7 minutes of our life will be wasted.
Hopefully 7 seconds.
Hopefully, but you know, those 5-minute entrances of Goldberg, you know.
That's right.
Mike and Joe, what was your favorite SummerSlam match of all time?
Well, I think, there's been a lot of good ones over the years. In fact, my favorite pay-per-view of all time is SummerSlam 91. So I know you're going to take a match from there, Jimmy. So I'm going to go my 1A, and I'm just going to say it. And this might be my new favorite, though, after watching it again tonight for the first time in a long time. SummerSlam 94. It was in Chicago at the brand new then United Center, home, of course, Michael Jordan, and now the Chicago Blackhawks. But Bret Hart and Owen Hart in a steel cage match. And this was during that time where Bret and Owen were in that big brotherly feud where it started at the Survivor Series in Boston some 9 months before, built up, had a great match at WrestleMania 10, and then they have to put him in a steel cage after Owen Hart wins the King of the Ring in 94. Great storyline here. You had Jim the Anvil Neidhart, who was sitting ringside. The British Bulldog was also ringside. Vince McMahon, who was on commentary with Jerry the King Lawler, went over to both of them before the match, and, you know, obviously, you look at it now, knowing what happened, but the foreshadow of it was, okay, we know that the Anvil is on Owen's side here, and what is he going to do to interfere? And the Bulldog was just happy to be back in the WWF at the time. Great match all around. I mean, it's so much easier to say now that Owen is deceased, but we really do appreciate his in-ring performance, everything. He was awesome in the ring. And Bret had an unbelievable suplex off the top of the steel cage that kind of was the beginning of the end there to seal the deal. And I do love the old steel cage rules when there was no referee inside the cage. The old rule was to escape and have your feet touch the floor in order to win. That's going to be brought back. I love that rule there. So then you had the Anvil come in, and he interfered at the end of the match, knocked over British Bulldog and his wife, and that set up more of a feud to carry over to Survivor Series 94, where Brett would eventually lose to Bob Backlund. Owen threw in the towel. So great storytelling here. Love the Bret Hart-Owen Hart feud. My favorite SummerSlam match of all time. Check it out. 25-year anniversary, 1994, steel cage match, Bret and Owen.
I'll go Jimmy and save the best for last, of course. We got Bret Hart versus the British Bulldog for the Intercontinental Championship, SummerSlam 1992. Now, if I can paint the picture for you, no Hulk Hogan in this SummerSlam. I believe right. This might have been the first one without him, and the main match is this one here. You know, you got the Intercontinental Champion and Bret Hart versus the British Bulldog at the time, his homeland. He's married to Diana, who is Bret Hart's sister. So they built up that whole entire storyline. They had the match going. They had the picture-in-picture with Diana in the stands. But I took a few notes on this one. I actually just watched it like recently. I wanted to watch it again. But the storytelling is there. Like, as far as you watch from today to now, you know, back then, the storytelling was completely there. You had Bobby Heenan and Vince McMahon on the call. You got all the what a maneuvers and you know, Bobby the Brain saying he's the king. It was amazing storytelling on that angle, but you had the family affair. Brett was hot, right? He's probably the best Intercontinental Champion at the time.
Yeah.
80,000 people at Wembley Stadium. Brett was the worker in this match, but the British Bulldog did show his athletic ability. The crowd was completely involved throughout the whole entire match. I want to say it almost went a half hour. But obviously during the match, people were behind Bret Hart. Then they started slowly getting behind the British Bulldog. But I wanted to just mention the holds here because there was, you know, this wasn't a one guy works and the other guy can't, but there were sleeper holds, figure four leg locks. The figure four turned into the sharpshooter. It was the first time anyone ever broke the sharpshooter when Bulldog got to the rope. There was a bulldog and headlock, if you remember, from Bret Hart. And Heenan goes, the bulldog got the bulldog, which was great. You had the Davey Boy Slam. You had an 8-second suplex, which now people are doing with Cesaro and guys like that are doing way more. But it was just a great finish. Bulldog had the momentum, and he won on a roll-up, just keeping the legs down of Bret Hart. That's how the finish happened. If you remember, Davey Boy got the got the belt, and Brett would not shake hands with him. Wife comes out to the ring. They hug it out. It ends with the three of them with their arms up in the air. But I just think it was iconic because there was no Hulk Hogan. Bret Hart was the main feature, yet it was the country of Davey Boy Smith. And just to me, as a 10-year-old kid, I think we got everything. We got the drama, the back and forth, the family angle, and we got the go-home moment. And I just thought it was outstanding, SummerSlam 1992.
And I think one thing that Brett has always talked about in that match is Davey got lost about a minute into the match. He was totally blown up, and Brett had to call that match as it was. But they had the match entirely laid out. And, of course, Brett would tell you that, you know, I had to do all the work for the match. But, you know, that was the premier worker that Brett was. The other side story to that is that main event was almost in Washington, D.C., and it was going to be Brett and Sean in a ladder match.
Wow.
And instead they went to Davey Boy and Brett at Wembley Stadium. But that was almost Washington, D.C., and Shawn Michaels was going to beat Bret Hart in a ladder match.
But then Sean and Brett fought at the Survivor Series that year in 92.
The year before. And they had just done a...
No. That upcoming. November 92.
Oh, because Brett went on to win the because Sean went on to win the IC title from Davey, and Brett won the world title from Ric Flair.
Exactly, yeah. So, and also something interesting in that 92 one. Do you remember what the championship match was, guys?
The Ultimate Warrior against Randy Savage, debate was about whose corner is Ric Flair and Mr. Perfect going to be in, and of course, it was his own corner.
Exactly.
And that was put together because Ric Flair was having some health issues. Even though they put the title back on him like 2 weeks later, which, whatever.
Right, Yeah. So there you go. Without Hulk Hogan, that's who carried the World Heavyweight title at the time.
My favorite SummerSlam match of all time comes from 1991's edition of SummerSlam. Constant theme here, guys. Bret Hart. Bret Hart versus Mr. Perfect, Intercontinental Championship. Just the storytelling. Perfect had a back injury. That was the focus of Bret Hart. Mr. Perfect, of course, with his work and shoes on here. The moment for me that, as a Bret Hart guy, him getting the sharpshooter on from the canvas of the mat as the finish was awesome. And then him tearing the tights off of Kurt Hennig and holding them as kind of a trophy over his shoulder along with the Intercontinental Championship. Just good stuff. Really, really good stuff.
Yep, in a hot crowd in Madison Square Garden.
Oh, yeah, too. They were into Bret. They were chanting for Bret at different points when Perfect slowed down the match and was doing those groin shots that weren't groin shots, because if you look closely enough, he lands the foot right on the inner thigh. You know, right. A little inner thigh action there.
Let me ask you guys this, right? We all mentioned Bret Hart as our favorite matches for SummerSlam here. And, you know, you mentioned 91, 92. Why couldn't Macho Man and Ultimate Warrior, like, take the torch, and it somehow in some way it ended up being Bret the Hitman Hart?
I think that was based on location, Joe. I think that was location, and at the time Bret got the title later on was because Vince was looking to go in a non-steroid younger direction. Bruce Pritchard talks in detail about that on one of his podcasts or shoot interview. I don't know. The guy's everywhere. Or used
but
to
like
be
I thought, like Shawn Michaels went up against Rick the Model Martel, like, you know what I mean?
At the because at like, the just, time, Joe, as Bruce Pritchard would describe, Vince never viewed Shawn Michaels as the WWF champion.
Yeah. Just funny how we all picked Bret, though. I thought that was
well, it's a tribute to him because you know, he puts on a great. Any time he's in the ring, I think he would be like, you know, your modern day AJ Styles, who I think is the best in ring performer right now. Yeah. And I think at the time, Bret Hart of that generation there probably was for anyone who went in the ring with him. And not taking away any of his opponents too, but he was the guy that made everyone better.
Two other Bret Hart matches that I think were tremendous from that SummerSlam era was him against The Undertaker for the championship in 97, where Shawn Michaels cracks Undertaker in the head with a chair and reluctantly counts three. And also the 2 out of 3 falls tag team match against Demolition, where Bret and Jim Neidhart win the tag belts. I think that was in Philadelphia. Two favorite matches of mine all time as well.
Yeah, no, it's a good one.
I just want to give you a modern day one, if that's okay.
Please do.
I just, the John Cena Brock Lesnar match from 2014. Hey, guys, I know we remember, right? It was a squash.
16 German suplexes.
Yeah, but that's where the suplex city came in. That's when Brock Lesnar, when you really look at it, may have like had that second takeover. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But the more I think about it, though, like that night, that was something I loved. I loved watching John Cena get all those suplexes that night. And again, we kind of saw the rise of of Brock Lesnar here. And you know, perhaps, I mean, would you call the match controversial?
No, not at all.
Nah.
It was a squash. And look at this. John Cena, one of the main guys in the company, just, again, put somebody over. Like, John Cena's putting over Brock Lesnar. Just think about that for a second there.
Yeah.
He's putting him over.
And he knew that John Cena knew that going in, because that was originally going to be Daniel Bryan.
That was after WrestleMania 30.
Because Bryan
right?
had to hand over the title in Boston at Money in the Bank. Cena won the double titles and walked into SummerSlam.
Yeah, that's right.
Gives you the storyline. It gives you the Cena effect and the Brock effect. And listen, it wasn't like the greatest match ever, but it was something that you remember. Oh, remember when John Cena got the 16 Super Bowl? Like that. That's why I just put that up there for modern day.
Yeah, it's a good one.
Mike, do you have a modern day?
You know, last year I thought the triple threat with Charlotte, Becky, and Carmella was really good. Because that was like kind of the beginning of, you know, the Becky getting everyone on her side and becoming the man. So that was really organic. How I like, and she did lose. Charlotte did win the match. Another one that I really like too. It was
just one here, Mike. Just one. You can't just grab back multiple modern matches.
I was gonna go. I was gonna Cena and AJ Styles 2016. Okay. But I'll leave it at that. That's right.
So you got there two in there. My modern favorite was the four-way match from SummerSlam 2017: Brock versus Roman versus Braun versus Samoa Joe. Just a car crash.
That was carnage.
It was awesome. It was just violence and just PG violence, right? Just PG violence. And that was the night that we all thought Roman was going to finally get it, and Brock 1F5 beat him clean.
Yeah. Yep. And may I add one thing, if you haven't watched this in a long time, you want to talk about PG violence. You go to 1996, the Boiler Room Brawl, The Undertaker and Mankind. And as an Undertaker fan, just seeing the turn of Paul Bearer on The Undertaker, just a shock. That was, wow, couldn't believe it when he smashed the urn on his head. And that was the beginning of, you know, where we would eventually see Kane about a year later. But that was kind of the grassroots of everything, getting it all in there for the eventual feud after he was done with Mankind. And then we did eventually see it at Hell in a Cell in 98. So just a great, great, it was a crazy carnage match, but unbelievable storytelling, 96, a Boiler Room Brawl, Undertaker, Mankind.
Just two quick notes before we get to Joe's Take five count, whatever. Joe's five fun things that he just wants to ask us about, which I love. Good job, Joe.
Yeah, good job, Joe.
The Blood, Gore, and Guts Company, also known as All Elite Wrestling. they sold out their television debut, which, good for them. It's amazing. 20,000-seat building, sold out on a Wednesday night in Washington, D.C., this company feels like it has a lot of momentum for its big events, and hopefully that will continue for them going forward. But selling out a Wednesday night for a wrestling show, good stuff. And oh, by the way, I think it helped that they announced Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks against a team led by Chris Jericho. I don't think the Cody Rhodes match was the one that sold all the tickets, but that's just me.
Thank you, Jericho. And also, they're going to crown a new women's champion that night, too.
That is true. And they'll start their tag team tournament at the pay-per-view in Chicago the end of August. And they'll continue that format on the television show. But good job announcing a real main event instead of, you know, a Cody squash match. New Japan, not so much a blood and guts and gore company. Although, watching Jon Moxley, maybe it's transitioning that way. Jon Moxley lost two matches in a row. One was a count out, which was about a 5-minute comedy match, which whatever. And then Jay White beat him after consistent interference by Gato, who is managing Jay White. I know that Moxley had to lose at some point via pinfall or tap out, but this was way over protecting Moxley. And also just, I'm not a Jay White guy, so that's kind of why I'm a little bitter, because Jay White beating Jon Moxley does nothing for me. Jay White Jay White was equivalent to Ron Garvin walking into Starrcade against Ric Flair in the same way that Jay White walked into Madison Square Garden as the IWGP champion against Okada. Just a joke.
It's a strong take.
One little detail that I liked was Kevin Kelly on commentary during Moxley's entrance said that Jay White's comparable to the Patriots, which is totally wrong. But I appreciated the Patriots reference by Kevin Kelly. It should have applied to Jon Moxley, but it was compared to the wrong wrestler. Yeah. Any thoughts on AEW or Jon Moxley?
I was surprised to see him lose two in a row. I mean, the one you kind of had a feeling it was probably going to happen. He wasn't going to go undefeated. But, yeah, the fact that he did lose the second, especially in the consecutive order fashion right there. But still, I am picking him. I still believe in him. Still believe in him. I did pick him to win this tournament. But you know what? It's good for him having the run that he's having right now. And it's only going to pick up momentum as AEW gets ready to go off the ground.
Do you guys think that CM Punk might have been a little upset? I don't know if you heard about this, but CM Punk's going to be at StarCast. We all know that. But he mentioned that, like, in a text, they kind of, like, offered him a deal. And he was, like, kind of upset about it because he, like, he's rooting for the guys, but, like, at the same time doesn't want to, like, you know, have to, like, get into, like, a contract thing with guys. Just do we think that CM Punk's officially done? Because I'm starting to go that route, guys.
Yeah, I think last year would have been the year to, you know, gone out there for the All In. And then, I don't know. I don't think he'll be. I think he's done. That's it. Just, it's over.
I never say never. And here's why.
There you go. He even said it himself, Jimmy. But he says whenever he does that, he always ends up doing it, he says.
So here's why. Because if you listen to the Colt Cabana podcast, he did the 4 hours. And he said during that he wants to be the Brock Lesnar guy at some point. And so that in my mind was filed away. And whereas WWE is offering these stupid contracts, if you get him for the right dollar amount and the right number of days, I bet he would come back, whether it be WWE or AEW or New Japan, whoever it is. To quote a very famous quote here, everybody has a price, and time heals all wounds. And so if there is I don't think CM Punk needs the money, but if they were to offer him 5 years, $1 million to work 30 dates, he'd take it.
Yeah, that's a good deal. It's a tough one to turn down.
Right? And again, I talk about, and I'm not saying that this is an informed speculation or anything like that, but if you're telling me that Fox needs a franchise needle-moving persona for their TV show, for their debut episode, or down the road, they're not doing well, CM Punk could be that guy.
Well, you know what? And you mentioned the time heals all wounds. Nobody ever thought that we would see Bret Hart back in the WWE. After everything that he went through at the hands of Vince McMahon, after his brother died in the ring. So if that's going to happen, then yes, I could see this happening.
The variable though here with WWE is Vince would take CM Punk back. I truly believe that.
Of course he would.
Paul
Absolutely.
Heyman is a CM Punk guy, or CM Punk is a Paul Heyman guy. Eric Bischoff, I think, thinks highly of CM Punk. Triple H might be the issue, because remember, Triple H is ultimately going to get this company, we think.
Yeah.
So if that's the case, remember, CM Punk won the title at Money in the Bank in Chicago against John Cena. He does the walk away, and then CM Punk is drug out of the runoff with the title story, which could have been amazing because, well, GD pal, we've got SummerSlam to sell and you versus Cena. That'll be great. So they get the title off of him because Del Rio cashes in. And then Triple H comes out of retirement to beat CM Punk at a B-level pay-per-view. And then you know what happened? Triple H went back into retirement.
Yeah.
He comes out of retirement to beat him, goes back into retirement after he beats him, and then because they're going a different direction, CM Punk ends up winning the title at Survivor Series, and we go on the 434-day run, which should have been longer, and that WrestleMania in New York should have been Undertaker, CM Punk, day 500 of CM Punk as the champion, and then you put it on Taker if you want to, or you have CM Punk beat the streak.
Someone is triggered. Whenever anybody mentions CM Punk, it's a trigger, right? He is just the trigger. The only reason why I mentioned it was because obviously it's always in the news, right? CM Punk. But wow, you got triggered there, Jimmy.
Yeah,
you know, it's like CM Punk, and everyone has a take on it, right? At some point, I think it like needs to be addressed. Are you going to be a wrestler or not anymore?
And I think door is still open for him. But here's why CM Punk triggers me. I watched this guy wrestle at the Cambridge Armory. I watched him wrestle in a steel cage at Wakefield High School. I watched him battle Samoa Joe in 3 consecutive championship matches for Ring of Honor. And so, like, I feel like he is my homegrown talent, even though he's from Chicago. It's a wrestler who I've just followed his career for so long, And I feel like, and I've been blessed to have interacted with him a number of times, and he's been a first class person to me. And that's why I'm a CM Punk guy. Yeah.
And just one thing to mention, if you read Forbes this week, there's a good article of the next big battle. It's not going to be AEW versus WWE. It's going to be trying to sign CM Punk. And if Forbes has it, maybe there's something to it. I don't know.
He really is right now the greatest mystery out there as to what is going to happen with him next, if he comes back or if he just goes off into the sunlight, because like I think Joe or Jimmy, whoever just said it, it needs to be addressed as to if he's done for good or if he does plan to come back. But it's going to be in a clear way to tell everyone, be ready, because CM Punk is going to be selling out arenas and selling t-shirts left and right. So it's one or the other.
Is CM Punk's legacy at the moment being fired on his wedding day / quitting at the Royal Rumble / suing WWE? Or is it he brought wrestling back into the mainstream with that promo in Vegas?
I'm going to go with the former. I'm going with the former because that's how people remember him as. That's the last thing he did say, or last thing he did. And sure, not taking anything away from him on the microphone, you can say all the things you want that he had great matches, he had unbelievable promos, you know, a great performer, solid champion. He held the title for a long amount of time, but he's always going to have that scarlet letter. He'll always have that saying, anytime he's brought up, well, he did sue the WWE and he did get fired on his wedding day. So that is always in the conversation, whether you like it or not. That is his legacy, unfortunately, right now, as of this moment.
I think his legacy is also a failed guy to leave, you know, professional wrestling and go to UFC. I think that's something that will always kind of bother him. You know, he's still trying to hang on to that commentary role. Coming back to wrestling, I think, would be good for him, and it would be very good for wrestling, no matter what promotion it was. So I think that's why people still talk about it.
Yep. He's one of the great performers of this generation, and it's a shame that he didn't get a positive send-off, in my very humble opinion. And unbiased
no, that's
opinion.
Fair. Yep. That's a fair opinion.
All right, boys, you ready to roll the dice? The
yes.
Five count?
Yes.
Let's go, baby.
All right, let's start off question number one. Speaking of retirement, The Rock this week on television said he quietly retired from wrestling. A, do you agree with that? B, is this part of an angle? Or C, do you think he's really done with professional wrestling?
James?
So I think that right now WWE can't meet his price, which is absurd. And I think he is done with WWE because they can't meet his price right now, or they're choosing not to meet his price, or his schedule isn't done. But I think we've probably seen The Rock work his last match, and maybe this adds some insight into why he wasn't at WrestleMania in New York. The speculation that I had was they moved NXT to Friday night and the Hall of Fame to Saturday because The Rock was going in the Hall of Fame that Saturday night, and then he was going to do something on Sunday, and they had those 2 days for him, and that didn't happen. And now we might have an understanding as to why. The other rumor, of course, was Roman versus The Rock was going to be the Saudi match, and that got messed up because Roman got sick. So I think The Rock is done as far as in-ring wrestling. It wouldn't shock me if they have him on the SmackDown debut on Fox, though.
Yeah, show's named after him. And I could totally see that if he is on that first show. I'm with you. I don't think he'll ever fight again in a competitive match. I could see him in an angle. You know, you do have, what's his face? Roman Reigns in the new Fast and Furious movie with him. So the Hollywood real life stuff there on that spectrum. I could see The Rock involved in, you know, something along those lines on the outside, but as far as him performing in the ring, no. Managing or something, sure, but that's it.
I'd like to see one more match and really hype it up.
Do you
Joe,
really?
Joe, what's your one more match?
I mean, I think that he'd have to put somebody over, but I would love to see Cena versus Rock one more time. Right? What was the saying?
Once in a lifetime became twice in a lifetime. So why not three times in a lifetime?
Boom, boom, boom. Registers. Just cash and checks, baby. That's what it's all about for those two. All right, moving on. And I this week, Cody Rhodes responded to Vince McMahon's comments about blood and guts. If you guys heard his comment back to him, mentioned recently there are public comments referring to our company as blood and guts. I just would like to say if they could taste their own words and spit them out, the whole entire business is built on blood and guts. So your thoughts on Cody always shooting back at Vince if Vince says anything about or even Triple H. It's kind of like this. Cody's always got to defend himself. Damn it.
I don't think he can help himself. I don't think he can help himself. He has to do it because, you know, he's trying to make a name for himself, being that guy there and being the dude of the AEW, trying to be the face of it. So he can't help himself. He's got to do it. But, you know, it's just going to be a war of words here going forward because that's how it is when you have two competitors going face to face.
At some point, the rest of the world is going to figure out that Cody is an actual sociopath.
Listen to Wrestling Inside the Ropes on the July 23rd episode. James Stewart explains for you, 2019. It's available in the archives.
All right, then. We'll leave it at
I'm,
that.
I'm going
right
to leave it at that. I'm just going to leave it calling You're Cody welcome. A sociopath. Okay. I mean, do you need more? Do you want more?
No, I don't need
like
more.
Like I said, okay. July 23rd, 2019 archives. Go ahead. Check it out.
Do you guys know the UFC
We should make
fighter?
This a weekly segment now. How does Jay Stu rip on Cody?
And now, time to rip on Cody.
This week, it's me calling him a sociopath.
I'm giving myself the Barry Horowitz pat in the back for giving Jimmy that alley-oop of the century.
Oh, my goodness. Like, stop. Like, you didn't need to be the first match announced for the TV show. And you weren't the reason why it sold out either. But, hey, keep taking credit for it. You were, again, the fourth vice president. You got Brandy a job, which was cool. Like, just stop. Let this company grow on its own. You don't need... He had another comment about Triple H and the throne thing. Like, just stop. Just stop, 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 stop.
And also, I don't want to see Cody Rhodes in a shirt and tie. I want to see him in the ring. Okay? Ooh. You're not an executive. Just stay in the ring and stay off of my TV or newspaper or whatever TV guide crap with a shirt and tie. You're in the ring. That's it.
Mike, he's a vice president. He is an executive.
Well, he's not. He's not in my book.
He is. He's the fourth vice president. He weaseled himself into a job there. He got Brandy a job, and away we go.
Well, whoop do you do?
But he is an executive.
It's almost a slip there. Sarge, we need a trigger sounder for Jimmy Stewart. Certain things just... He gets triggered. I've heard it a couple of times in today's show.
Sure.
You mentioned Cody in the ring. Next one here is Cain Velasquez is the last fighter or was the fighter to retire Brock Lesnar from UFC. He chose AAA Triple Mania over WWE, and he's also a luchador as well. Your thoughts on UFC fighters, champion fighters, choosing wrestling, and what do you think of the Cain Velasquez era? Because he teamed up with Cody Rhodes this week. Triple Mania. They did a six-man tag. He was teamed up with him, but he was outstanding. And like when I tell you that he was awesome, like, dude, he was doing all the moves and looked nothing like a heavyweight UFC fighter. So just want to get you guys' thoughts on possibly Cain Velasquez choosing another promotion over WWE. And hey, that Cain Velasquez, Brock Lesnar, that could be something that WWE could certainly.
Well, I wonder if that's part of the road to Tampa. Is and Kane goes to AAA, works out some kinks. Then you see him at the Rumble, and he's your transition from UFC Brock. He's the guy who beats Brock Lesnar in Tampa. I wonder if that's the situation. And now you have another UFC fighter as the Universal Champion, getting the torch passed to him from Brock Lesnar. That would be how I would long play it.
Can a Lucha Libre defeat Brock Lesnar? Be honest.
Seth Rollins did at WrestleMania.
Yeah. It can't.
Three low blows, three stomps, and away we go.
He's Rey Mysterio on steroids. This is what it looked like to me the other night.
Joe, it's pro wrestling.
But and that's exactly it. Jimmy just made my point that it's so much easier for these guys to make the jump to from UFC to a sports entertainment entity where, you know, they're still going to get the money. They're not going to get as hurt. And I can't blame him for doing that. Yes, I'd be in on that there. I also think that opens up the door for a Cyborg return or make a jump to sports entertainment, the WWE. We know the real life issues with her and Ronda Rousey, which we talked about earlier this year. So I could totally see that, especially if Ronda's out, because Vince and Dana White, whatever you want to say about both of them, both have a very good relationship behind the scenes.
And I just looked it up, but there was a question. Did Brock Lesnar ever reach out to Cain Velasquez? No. He was a part of the WWE Performance Center in Florida a year ago. Trained there, got his feet wet, but says that Brock has never reached out.
One thing, too, about athletes making the transition. Ronda Rousey's transition was awesome. Kurt Angle's transition into WWE was awesome. There's just something about the higher profile athlete that I think just stems that they can transition into the world of pro wrestling sports entertainment just very well.
Okay, then. So I just, yeah, if you watch that, watch a clip, you'll see Cody and Cain Velasquez together. And Velasquez was a luchador. He looked by, again, Rey Mysterio, Sin Cara, if you will. Like, he had some size, but also wore the mask. I thought it was pretty good. August 16th, there is a promotion called Prison Break. If you have heard of it, it's a
it's a Fox television show.
There you go. So, do you know who some of these? Not that show.
But
one of the people, wrestlers who will be on hand that night, one Enzo Amore, who will be with Kaz XL Cast this week, spoke about why he was let go from WWE. Mm-hmm. Mentioned going off the script in the Daniel Bryan angle, etc. But this August 16th, guys, here. Jerry Lawler, Renee Young, David Arquette will be there. Dustin Rhodes and John Moxley all will be on hands. But your guys' thoughts on Enzo trying to get back into professional wrestling?
So Enzo's a good promo, and that is the Northeast wrestling show that you speak of, Joe.
Correct. Yep,
so exactly. That's in Poughkeepsie. Shout out Hale Collins. He's going for their championship that night. Personal favorite of mine, friend of mine. Maybe more to come with him in the next week or so. It's a big show. It's a show that I was almost going to drive to Poughkeepsie, New York to see.
By the way, do you know who they're fighting? Cat going up against the Thrill Ride in Jared Silverglade.
Nice.
Exactly. As far as Enzo was always a great promo. So he's got value somewhere in pro wrestling. Now, his legal matters aside, which are there's an issue there legally with him. But as far as Enzo and Cass, they were a great act. They were tremendous in WWE. They balanced each other well. Great promos, great size, good athleticism, all that stuff. Remember, too, 205 Live started becoming interesting when Enzo got the 205 Live belt. So there's value in both of them. You know, but they have their issues that have made people kind of stay away from them. I think that's why they didn't sign a deal with Ring of Honor, was the price they were asking and all of the other drama that comes along with them.
Yeah, and you know what? I recently did see an article, too, with Big Cass. He dealt with some real-life depression, too. Did you see that, too?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, you know, and good for him to try to stay busy and tackle that there and, you know, have some projects on his mind and do whatever is necessary. But you know what? The Enzo and Big Cass tag team, at one point, they were pretty darn popular. They were a hot tag team. So good for both of these guys still getting a shot, doing what they got to do to get some airtime.
And I think the only reason why they were never WWE tag team champions was Matt and Jeff Hardy came back at WrestleMania in Orlando.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Otherwise, they would have won that ladder match because that's where they were going with it, I think. And then they got the Hardys signed, and, well, that's your big Orlando surprise. And really one of the few lasting memories from WrestleMania 33 in Orlando. There was that Shane versus AJ. I think the Brock Lesnar-Goldberg match was one of them. And then Undertaker's retirement, which was a train wreck of a match.
Yeah, unofficial retirement too.
Yeah.
Final one for me this week. Wanted to try to go around like to see what else was out there, but I figured I'd stay with WWE. But do we all know where this angle is going with Roman Reigns and his attacker?
Daniel Bryan.
Okay, and I think we all agree on this one.
Daniel Bryan.
Yeah.
Is this something we could see at SummerSlam?
Well, now that you don't have... No, I don't see it at SummerSlam.
Well, so Roman Reigns doesn't have a match scheduled for SummerSlam, so this would be easy.
Oh, he does? Okay, wait a minute. For some reason, I thought he did. So, 100%, yes.
Okay, so you think this will happen?
Yeah.
I'll tell you right now.
What are the odds on that?
There's no odds. But I will say, that could be the best match on the card.
It could be. And they had a great match a few years ago before WrestleMania in Dallas at Roadblock or Eliminate, whatever the pay-per-view was before that. So it's Daniel Bryan who's really, if not the premier in-ring worker in WWE, he's top five, top three, against Roman Reigns, who has had a time where he was legitimately the top dog, and then I think for a number of different reasons. The one concern that I would have about putting Bryan and Roman in the same match is if Roman has the endurance to be able to hang with Bryan because of his treatment.
He spoke about it this week. He mentioned that he thinks he's got about another 5 years left of doing it the way he's doing it now.
But it's a matter of, like, I think there have been certain times where Roman has been booked to protect him because of how he's feeling. I mean, he's less than a year out of treatment, and this is real life stuff.
Yeah.
Right.
It's not like he's just mailing in matches and they're just doing 8 seconds to get him in and get him out. I mean, there are days where I think he shows up for shows and he's like, guys, I don't have it today.
It's kind of,
and they have
it.
To kind of work around that.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. And you know, to Roman Reigns' credit too, he has done, after the cancer treatment, he's so over with the crowd right now. So a good storyline telling there is Bryan is the heel. It definitely works perfectly there. And I hope they are able to live up to the expectations from what we saw a couple of years ago in that match.
But I think the idea for Roman is you're getting him ready for Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania in Tampa. And he finally beats Brock Lesnar at a WrestleMania for the Universal Championship.
Right.
And I think that's your main event in Tampa.
Cool. There you go.
Yeah, final thing is just Harley Race passed away this week.
Yep.
Hall of Fame wrestler. I just want to throw out, I think he should go in as a Hall of Fame manager as well. He really, when I think of Harley Race, I think of him as some sort of like an underappreciated superstar. Yeah. You know, there's always the other guys with the glitz and the glamour, but this guy could talk and could bring it and do it in the ring. And just like when I think about my childhood, I remember the King of the Ring. And I mean, he really started that, right? He might have been the best King of the Ring that there has been, and we can dispute that someday, but maybe it should be the Harley Race King of the Ring tournament going forward like they have with other wrestlers. But just thinking about, like, with him and Vader, I just think about that duo together. I mean, those are two Hall of Fame guys just, you know, that were all over the world and had a little bit of a break in WWE. And just, I don't know, I feel like that's a guy that had a really good run, nothing special, just meat and potatoes, and was just outstanding.
Yeah, meat and potatoes, like you said, Joe. And, you know, he had some good opponents over the years, too. He had many feuds with Dusty Rhodes, Ric Flair, too. That Starrcade match with him, I think it was 83 or 84, the Steel Cage match. One of the best matches, too. Check it out. Go, if you have the network, watch that.
But this guy was in every promotion, Mike.
I know.
WWE, every one of them.
Right, right. And just, you know, to be able to be inserted there and to kind of, you know, you have all those main event opponents there. It just shows how talented he was. And like you said, Joe, kind of underappreciated wrestler, especially of his this time here. A lot of people don't think of him as a top 10 guy, but very underappreciated and a sad loss for the wrestling world.
Three quick stories on Harley Race. One, if you read Bob Backlund's book, Bob Backlund gives Harley Race a lot of credit for his success in pro wrestling. Two, Starrcade 83, Harley Race was offered a lot of money to not drop the world championship to Ric Flair. Three, Harley Race was Vince McMahon's king of pro wrestling, because I don't think that Vince was never going to give Harley Race the championship, because Hulk Hogan was on such a run at the time. Which leads me to, if you're going to watch one Harley Race match in the WWF, Saturday night's main event, it was before WrestleMania 4. Hogan had just lost the title to Andre, which then got handed over to Ted DiBiase, which is now a valid transaction based on Ted DiBiase buying the 24/7 title off of Medusa. So Ted DiBiase is now a former WWF champion. And Jack Tunney, of course, was on the take at the time. But if you watch that match from that Saturday night's main event, Hogan versus Harley Race, watch how Harley Race sells for Hogan and makes Hogan look so much better than a lot of matches. A lot of people made Hogan look good, but this match in particular, I think, was a crown jewel level performance of Harley Race in the WWF, a match against Hulk Hogan.
Mm-hmm. And I was looking up the Wrestling Observer match of the year, 1983 versus Ric Flair at Starrcade.
There you go.
He was Wrestler of the Year in 1980 and 1981. And if you think about that era, he was Wrestler of the Year, considering some of the other big names that are out there. Yeah. Again, Hall of Famer, no doubt, just maybe underappreciated.
Man, true pro. One thing about that is I think that Starrcade match against Flair in the cage was the only time that Flair hit that crossbody block, and he won the match based on it.
Wow.
Week, you can listen to Wrestling Inside the Ropes on the podcast page of 985thesportshub.com and on the 985 The Sports Hub app. While you're there, check out all the other original podcasts available from Boston's Home for Sports. Our podcasts are also available at bpodstudios.com and in Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts. For Joe Murray at Joey Murr, that's JoeyMurr. Mike Riley is at Sarge985. The show's Twitter account is at WrestleCast985. You can follow me on Twitter at IamJamesStewart. And we'll talk to you after SummerSlam.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.